Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I'm proud to bring you Sword and Sandal Cinema. I'm going to start with a legend of Hercules called Hercules Conquers Atlantis, also known as Hercules and the Captive Women. After some good-natured brawling in a local tavern, King Androcles of Thebes, the mighty Hercules, and his son Hylas, plus their diminutive companion Timoteo, share an ominous experience. Tiresias, the blind seer of Thebes, informs them that the gods have spoken and that a peril from the far west, beyond the straits, threatens all of Greece. Unable to rally his followers, his fellow kings or the collective citizenry, Androcles gathers an unwilling crew and with the help of Hylas and Timoteo, drugs and kidnaps Hercules, who decided to sit this one out. The sea voyage is doomed. Mutiny is followed by storm, then shipwreck. Hercules finds himself alone and afloat in misty waters. After praying to Zeus, he locates an island, defeats the shapeshifter Proteus, and rescues Ismene, princess of Atlantis. The protective mist that long held Atlantis from the eyes of intruders is also lifted. And here we'll pause until the middle of the show when I will continue. So we're going to start with Ron Carson. Greetings, Ron. How are you tonight?
Γεια σου, τι κάνεις? Καλά, εσύ πώς είσαι?
I'm doing great. I hear you have the Vengeance of Ursus prepared for us tonight.
And it is directed by Luigi Capuano, and the star of the show in the title role was Samson Burke. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
Of course.
If you're familiar with his work.
In the Three Stooges movie, I believe, also, when the Three Stooges met Hercules. I believe that was...
Oh, yes. Now you definitely have jogged my memory on that. Absolutely. That was Samson Burke in a role. Yes, I do remember, for sure. But in this instance, we're going pure peplum, not comedic, as we did a while back. And I'm just going to give you a quick synopsis of what this movie is all about.
Okay.
It, of course, focuses on the mighty warrior Ursus, who was a disciple of King Alteo, who retired from the military to run a farm in the countryside with his little brother, Dario. And this is all, of course, in the name of love, as the beautiful princess Cira, who is played by Wandisa Gida, is pretty much on demand over here. And the evil King Zagro asks the king of a neighboring country for permission to wed Princess Cira, and the hope is that it will join these two countries together. But the princess learns that Zagro plans to assassinate her father and then dispose of her, leaving Zagro in complete control of both countries. Now,
oh no, that can't happen.
No. Well, I'm going to go a little further here. Zagro has a spy, and that's the king's advisor, Licurgo. And as you know, Ursus learned of this diabolical plot and warns Alteo of the danger, but Zagro captures Ursus's brother and threatens to kill the boy if he does not surrender. So what does Ursus do? Of course, in the name of family, he turns himself in and became a slave in Zagro's prison camp. But he managed to escape without fear of endangering his little brother's life, and the duo head back to King Alteo's kingdom. But Licurgo is pretty much the backstabber throughout this entire picture, as he influences Alteo to doubt Ursus that he is lying about Zagro, and he wants to marry the princess himself, which, of course, becomes a much-needed, respite for the day, for the ending of this particular picture.
Mm-hmm.
And Licurgo is plotting an assassination to murder the king and wants Ursus framed for that crime. So, Ursus is going through several tests of strength. The greatest is he is tied to an elephant, which drags him closer and closer to a wooden wall with razor-sharp knives. But Ursus succumbs to his peril, and with great strength, he resists the creature, and he succeeds to convince everybody that Zagro was behind the assassination. But Zagro, of course, gave Licurgo his ultimate death. And Ursus then stabs Zagro to death with his own sword in the typical peplum fashion and liberates the people. Syra takes over the throne, and guess what? She wants Ursus to rule at her side, and they are celebrating their newfound freedom in this brand new kingdom. How about that? So there you go. There's the synopsis of this movie.
So Ursus saves the day and topples the tyrant and solves the problem, and the romance turns out well.
That is correct. Some of the other supporting cast members, King Zagro was portrayed by Livio Lorenzon. Gianni Rizzo was the backstabbing Licurgo. Nerio Bernardi was King Alteo. And some lovely ladies also. Nadine Sanders was Sabra. And Gina Revere was Lydia. Now, this movie was released in late 1961 out in Italy before it made its way to the States the following year. And I don't have a total budget of how much they spent on this movie and if it actually made any money in the long run. But, you know, with sword and sandal films being very rampant at that time of the year when we were kids, which did okay. That's my deductive reasoning on this, because at that point, a couple of movies were pretty much well attended worldwide and pretty much everybody was going out there for that escape to that era that we all know and love so much over here. And I wouldn't be surprised if my uncle Achilles in Athens, who showed quite a few peplum films when he had the outdoor cinema, pretty much gave this a spin or two at his theater out there in the capital city of Greece. So I'm not surprised, because, you know, we of the Greek faith really embrace the peplum culture, and we pretty much love the aspect of these films, which have ties to our native land. And being that you are Hercules, of course, that also adds a nice mix to the whole deal here, so to speak. And I just wanted to comment in the beginning of your speech. What a peril you got into, brother.
What a peril I got into?
Yeah, well, you got captured. You talked about the beginning, if you remember, in your monologue.
Oh, that was my review of Hercules Conquers Atlantis. And it's one of my favorite peplum movies. Red Spark and Alan Steele and some of the other ones, I'm a really big fan of theirs. And we grew up with these movies, as you pointed out, not only on the small black and white TVs that our families had, but also in Greece, in Lemnos, they used to project them on the wall.
We attended a screening or two in the old country.
Yeah, and they had peplums playing on the walls at night, and everybody would come and bring food and sit on their steps. And they would be projecting it on the white walls of some a building that was well plastered. Then we also had these strongmen and the magicians who used to come around. And I remember the strongmen, some of them were Samson, some of them were Heracles. And I talked to a lot of them. And for a while, that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to travel around the place and, like hit sledgehammers with my head and pull cars with my teeth. And do things like that.
A feat that is not impossible in your realm of business over here.
These guys were doing, but one guy, Samson, He and his wife talked me out of it. They said it's a very difficult life, and you experience a lot of injuries and, you know, and things like that. So that was a path I did not take, doing feats of strength while traveling around, alas. But I could have.
Duly noted. Duly noted. I still remember our pilgrimage to Poljochny, just outside Kamienia, if you remember,
yes.
On the last trip that we took together in 1993, how fascinating that was in more ways than one.
And there were seven cities there, one on top of the other, just like in Troy. So it goes back to the Stone Age, the settlements on the roofs.
Oh, no doubt about it. And I hopefully down the road would like to head back to the old country with you and continue on more further adventures. What I would like to do is see where Hephaestus was banished. I know there's a monument in Limnos or a setting where we could see the actual location of where Hephaestus was taken to our homeland and eventually continued his exile. So have you gone to that or not?
I haven't gone to the Hephaestia, but I know a lot of people who have. There were therma, there might still be therma there, like hot spas, you know, with hot water.
Yes, the therma, yes.
Hephaestus was flung from Olympus and landed in the waters near Limnos, and there he was nursed back to health by the mermaids that live around Limnos. Limnos has its own mermaid, Kabiro, and so Kabiro and her people, they nursed Hephaestus back to health, and then Limnos has an extinct volcano on it, I believe. So Hephaestus and his Kyklopes and his golden robot women, they set up shop there, and he used to make some of the implements of the Olympians there on the island. Some say that's where Prometheus stole fire from and gave it to humanity, from Limnos, the extinct volcano. And I don't know if you know that Lemnian soil was considered to be medicine. So the giant Orion, when he was blinded, came to Limnos and washed his eyes in the mud of Limnos and was able to see again.
Yes, I do remember the old fable in more ways than one. And the bottom line is I just wanted to elaborate on the audience about the Thermata, which is still a very, very active part of our island. I mean, that's where the majority of the Greek people that reside in Limnos continue to pick up water over there because they feel like the water is so sort of blessed by the Lord, you know, and blessed by many other other entities, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
But the area still exists in Limnos, just to let you know.
Oh, yeah, and there are still sightings of the old creatures, like the Nereides. I heard so many Nereides stories. I heard Kalikanzari stories. I heard stories of Airika. I heard stories of Satyrus. You know, so these
yes.
beings from mythology are still seen to this day, or at least to the day when I was still going to Limnos on a fairly regular basis. Mm-hmm. So the mythology lives on in the island. And I remember a lot of older people, too, talking about Otheos Purvondai, the god who thunders. So since that's
correct.
Not the god of the Judeo-Christian tradition, there has to be memories of Zeus that they're bandying about. And a lot of people on Limnos know that were descended from Jason and the Argonauts when they landed on the land of Amazon women, which was Limnos at the time.
Hmm.
And we even have a family member named after Jason because of that story.
Yes, absolutely. Our little cousin, Jason, has that moniker in our family from the Karamidas side. So hard to believe he turned 50 years old this past May.
Yep.
How time sure flies in more ways than one. So
that it does. You're a kid, and then you turn around, and before you know, you're an old man. And
I always say that age. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I always am a firm believer that age is just a number for people. That age really shouldn't pretty much be the identifier of people. I mean. Last Thursday, I just turned 62. I officially became a senior citizen, and
happy birthday.
Come fall, Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm catching up with you here, brother.
Yep.
But I'm trying to say is that, you know, I'm trying to say one thing, that it doesn't mean a number to be put into your life. It means that, all right, you're that X amount of years old, but as long as you have the drive and the stamina to continue what you want to do in life, then that's my solution. Go for it, so to speak.
All right, of course. There's always I don't have an actual written bucket list anymore, but I used to for many years. I had a list of all the things I wanted to do, and then I would try to do them, and I would cross them off. And if you mm-hmm. do keep a list like that, you'd be surprised. Like, I flew an airplane for a while because it was on my bucket list on one of my trips out west to California years ago. So if you have a small private commercial plane, I flew it for like an hour and a half.
You never told me this story, Xavilfe.
I guess it didn't come up in conversation, but I've done a lot of things. Like that's how I got my TV show when I had it on cable. It was on my list, and an opportunity came up, so I took the opportunity, and that ran for like 3-4 years. That adventure in my life.
Yeah.
So I still have things I want to do, and I'm trying to cross off as many things off the now mental list as possible before I go.
Power to you. I mean, you still have the drive, you still have the stamina, and remember, you're Hercules too, so that definitely should fit into the mix over here.
That it does. And well, you knew what you wanted since you were a very young child, I remember. Most kids used to play with like fire trucks and things like that, or toy soldiers. You had your studio set up at a desk with a
that is correct. Right before podcasting was ever so popular. That was in my teen years, actually. But when I was a kid, yeah, I played with toys, but the most important fixture in my hand was the transistor radio.
Yes.
And I wish I still had that first radio that my parents gave me when I was 3 years old, because there's just so much history to that, because the very first voice that I heard was of the legendary Dan Ingram on WABC, and then eventually I would wind up to meet Dan over a decade later, and he became one of my dear friends and mentors in life.
So that's a very rare thing. Not everybody gets a chance to discover what they want to do early in life and have the types of mentors that you've had or the career that you've had. You were recently honored in a broadcaster's museum yourself.
Yes, I am the sole recipient of the New England Radio Hall of Fame Broadcasting Award, which was bestowed to me back in late 2021. It's an accolade that I take humbly, because the bottom line is that when I go into the studio and I entertain an audience, that's my primary goal, not to do things and satisfy myself. It basically is because of the fact that Harry Harrison, who was another dear friend and mentor of mine also from WABC and from CBS-FM, actually told me when I first broke in the business, before I went into Catskill, New York, to get my, to get my start in radio, he says to me, remember one thing, that you're in there to entertain the audience, not yourself. And that has been my mantra ever since I pretty much started in this business on a professional basis over 40 years ago, if you can believe it. May 29th of 1983 was the first air shift I had at WCKL in Catskill. And then eventually it would lead to bigger and better opportunities in my life. But I always never forget the first place that I worked at and got my start, because unfortunately the radio station is dormant right now. It's not on the air anymore. But if I ever win the lottery, I am definitely looking to pick that place up and put it back to the traditional way of live and local radio, and to also present music that would entertain our adults and seniors, especially the senior citizens, who I feel are a forgotten entity in this current business these days. And I'm very near and dear to those who are in that category because I already officially am myself. So, but before I even reached the plateau of age 62, I always thought that young and old alike, you're tuning into my show and I'm talking to you on a one-on-one basis. I'm not talking to a group like other people usually function on the air. I usually include you and only you in the conversation when I'm talking and doing a break. So that's what it comes down to. You have to include your audience and you have to definitely make sure that you target those who are also forgotten in this business. And in my opinion, the senior citizens, the way corporate radio is pretty much ignoring them is just not right. Because they're consumers, they're people, they want to tune into the radio for information and music, so why forget them? You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It's basically a universal thing in radio to include everybody that puts your show on the air and listens. And
well,
that's what it comes down to.
Vinyl records made a comeback, which I think surprised everyone. So who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe old time radio. And there are efforts to bring back the drive-in theaters, like Brian Walker does that, and other people I've met over the years are really involved in trying to bring that back. So you never know. Old-style radio stations might make a comeback.
And I'll be the first on board to be included in one of those down the road. So that's one of my goals in my senior citizen life is to reach that plateau. And speaking of drive-in theaters, there are still a handful of them left here in our neck of the woods where I am. And they pretty much play the packed houses, which is unbelievable. And to me, it's
great.
Absolutely. So Brian is keeping the torch alive for those best moments in life that people remember when going to the drive-in theater. Although now, movies have to be presented digitally instead of via a projector, unfortunately. I still vote for the projector, if you ask me. But because they got to keep up with the times and eventually you still have that aura of, you know, putting the speaker on the front seat of your car and turning up the volume and actually watching from your vehicle. And it's nice to know that it hasn't totally disappeared. And we're hoping that it keeps on flourishing, so to speak. And anyway, when we have somebody like Brian Walker who keeps that momentum alive, I give him kudos with a capital K.
Yes, so do I. Brian's doing a lot of great work on a lot of different levels. He's also just retired himself.
Well, I got news for you. Eventually, excuse me, I've been talking too much over here, but eventually I'm reaching that plateau in about 2 months when I get my first Social Security check. And right now, I'm kind of picturing this as a new adventure in my life. I mean, I'm a little scared. I'm a little confused. As time goes on, I might be able to pull this off with flying colors, so to speak.
I think you will. You're very talented. You have a very long history in what you do, and you have a reputation in what you do, and you also have a lot of industry contacts, so I'm sure something will come along. And on that note, we have to close our conversation because I have to go to part
That's
two.
That's fine.
This conquers Atlantis. So how can people reach you, Ron? And
a couple of ways you can. I'm losing my voice over here, and I apologize that.
Okay.
You can friend me on Facebook. Just type in Ron Carson in the toolbar. You'll see on my profile picture our beloved Church of Evangelistria, a.k.a. the Annunciation of the Virgin Mary, and a proudly displayed cover photo of my late great mother, along with our dear friend Dora Spiro, and your mom, Elisabeth, my godmother. They are proudly on the cover picture. I haven't changed that since my mother's passing, and I don't intend to. And I welcome some of your audience members to request me as a friend, and I'd be able to interact with them in more ways than one. So I'm also available via the LinkedIn site, the social networking business platform. So you can hook me up there. When you sign in, you type in on the toolbar Ron Carson, and I will be there waiting for you as well. And more importantly, listen to my show. I do a Saturday morning request program that averages at least 25 calls per day, per week. And we play nothing but great music from the 70s and 80s. I also do an earlier show on Saturdays at 7, and I fill in for my boss quite a bit. You'll be able to catch me at some point on the air, and we'll keep that going until the fall, and then we never know what happens after that. So I may stay, but I may go, but if that's the case, new adventures await me. So then your support and your love is always very, very important to me.
Well, you got it. You're my brother. So, you know, we have to love our brothers in order to support their efforts. Thank you so very much for being here today. Again, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Epicis.
Same to you, my brother. And, you know, we are more than cousins. We've taken our relationship to the next level ever since we were kids. I mean, you've always been my so-called big brother, and that will never change. I love you for that, Hercules.
I love you too, and I wish you well, and I will talk to you very soon.
All right, Tata Fume, I'll talk to you later.
Okay, be well.
Kalnichta. Kalnichta. Thank you. You too. Kalnichta. Bye-bye.
Kalnichta. Bye-bye. And now we return to Hercules Conquers Atlantis. Making their way to Atlantis, they encounter many mysteries. Just who exactly is the instrument of true deific will in these particular circumstances? Why would Queen Antinea gleefully sacrifice her own daughter? What is King Androcles doing here? Why does he now have amnesia and firmly support acts of Atlantean imperialism? Why do evil queens always fall for Hercules? And why are they outraged when he predictably spurns them? With the guidance of Zenith, priest of Uranus, the blessings of Zeus, and some help from his companions, including his many, Hercules rescues Androcles, rekindles hope in the hearts of doomed mind slaves, leads an uprising, and thwarts the schemes of Queen Antinea, which include gaining personal immortality, plotting world domination, and misusing the blood of her god to create mutants and a master race of manly blonde clones. He also rights many wrongs, restores balance in the heavens, and almost single-handedly destroys the island kingdom. Greece is saved. Androcles is restored. Hylas and his many are going steady. Timotheo is unharmed, and Hercules is in good spirits. Together, they sail toward the rising sun and home. I enjoyed this movie a great deal. Reg Park delivers one of my favorite portrayals of the Theban Hercules, and the many unfortunate appeals to and affirmations of the power of Uranus lend much unintended humor to this fun mythic adventure. Onwards to Brian Walker of Brian's Drive-In Theater and his tribute to Gordon Mitchell, whose birthday fast approaches. Greetings and welcome, Brian. How are you?
I'm well tonight, Hercules. How are you this evening?
I'm doing well, and I'm looking forward to your tribute tonight.
As am I. You know, one of the first people that I, you know, was able to establish contact with when I started the Many Faces of Hercules page at Brian's Drive-In Theater was Gordon Mitchell. And I was amazed at how accessible he was, how much information, how many photos he was willing to share, and would essentially tell you anything you ever asked. So, you know, I love people like that who are proud of their careers. And indeed, his birthday is coming up. It'll be on Saturday. He was born on July 29th, 1923, and this would be his 100th birthday.
Wow.
Yeah, it's something to think about, isn't it? And when you look through the list of sword and sandal actors, if you look at the filmographies of those actors, he's got the biggest one. I mean, it goes on. There's reams of it. Even he couldn't remember what all he'd been in because you know, he would pop into movies, you know, here and there. He had a small studio in Italy from time for a period of time, and I think they shot maybe, you know, 140, 150 movies there over the course of a few years. And if he was around, he might be, you know, a bartender or might be in a fight scene. You just never knew. But he was in significantly more films than all of the other actors put together, really, if you want to just compare, you know, filmographies. And, you know, he wasn't shy about jumping from genre to genre. He's in, you know, peplum films. He's in horror movies. He's in so a lot of spaghetti westerns, and that's the thing that he was probably in the most of. Particularly since the little film studio he owned was essentially a Western town set.
He owned the Western town set?
Yes. Like I said, a small one in Italy. He said that it was practically unheard of for a non-Italian to own something like that in Italy at the time. And he said that the red tape was, you know, way worse than anything Americans can ever imagine from his description of it. And you know, he was in business here as well, so I guess he could talk about, you know, which side of the ocean you were on, because he'd lived in, you know, both places. He said that after a while, it just became, you know, impossible to keep the studio going, you know, with all the, you know, various and sundry interferences from the government, you know, local and otherwise. So he had to give it up. But he appeared in a lot of films, seemed to really enjoy filmmaking, although that's not what he, you know, started out wanting to do really so much. Considering his birthday, that makes him a Leo, and I am a fellow Leo. And yeah, I know you're a Gemini, correct?
Correct. I never behaved like a Gemini, but yes, I'm a Gemini.
Well, some people don't conform.
Happy birthday to you as well.
we still have a few more weeks for that.
But still, happy birthday.
But thank you. Where I'm going is with this. You know, whenever you learn that somebody you're talking to is a Gemini, you know, most people will think, "Oh, you know, that's kind of interesting." You know, or if you're a Libra, people will think, you know, that person you know, strives hard to be very fair, when in reality they just can't make decisions. And you know, with Scorpios, everybody thinks, ooh, you hubba hubba, you, because they're supposed to be the most sexually driven, you know, of the sun signs. And everybody assumes Leos are, I don't know, egotistical assholes or something like that. Because whenever, if you're talking about, signs and such, whenever it gets around to me and I say Leo, everybody goes, oh. And I think Gordon Mitchell really exemplifies all of the good traits of Leos, and I'm here to tell you that there are some. He really does. He was very hardworking, you know, dedicated. Once he found his niche, he ran with it and wrote it out for a long time, you know, longer than anybody else, you know, in his position. Kind of lived a wild life too, and you know, for the time, kind of uninhibited as well. You know, like a lot of other men, he was involved in World War II. I think he became of age, you know, right around 1941 or so, when the wartime America was just beginning to gin up, really. He was a POW when he came back. From service, he got married. He had a very brief marriage in the 1940s, just a few years. Went to school, on the GI Bill, got a teaching certificate, and started teaching high school in Southern California. And meanwhile, he developed, an interest in, bodybuilding. And you hung out at Muscle Beach in the late 40s and early 1950s. He was very much into the physical culture, of that era. And you learned a lot from it, hung out with everybody that you can imagine, from that era, knew everyone. He is the one peplum film actor who knew all the rest of them. I don't think any of the other actors can really say that. But he worked with practically everybody, and if he hadn't worked with them, he had known them at some point in their lives.
That's
so
amazing.
He's very outgoing, and not only did he know these people, he also kept in touch with a lot of them as much as he could. And like I said, he was the first person that I really connected with. When I was doing the website, and I have a real soft spot in my heart for Gordon Mitchell. I still have a lot of the information and photographs that he sent. And he would write furious notes. I mean, but copious notes along the side, trying to explain what the situation was in a particular photograph and such. Very informative, and he really informed the Gordon Mitchell page at Brian's Drive-In Theater. He approved every word that was there.
That is great.
And some of the words are actually his, to tell you the truth. I just copied them on over because I thought, well, that is the best way to say that, like I said, great guy, and worked right up until the end. He passed away at age 80 in September of 2003. But while that is sad, I think he went to the best way possible, which is just to go to sleep and not wake up, to not have to linger in some, horrible state, just boom, done. I really think that I think that's the best way to go. I don't want to snuff it and tell me about 100 or so, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean, yeah.
I mean, and if you ask me, that's a really charmed life to be able to, he didn't have a lot of, familial ties or anything, and that frees one up, for other things, but he traveled the world, he made movies all over, Europe, Asia, he made some here. In North America, he got to see a lot of the world, got to know a ton of people. He taught Elizabeth Taylor how to ride a horse.
Wow.
There's just there's so much about him, and he wasn't. A lot of people, I think, would presume that Leo's would have to be the star, right?
Right.
Given the See, even you've bought into the mythos of Leo. and that just wasn't the case with him. He was just really intrigued with, filmmaking. It really became, something that, kind of took over for him. And he loved working. And he liked, all aspects of film production, really. And, became, quite good at all of them. He was able to get a production off the ground. He was able to, do his own stunts. when somebody would bash him over the head with a breakaway chair. there's a lot of physicality in that. And if you look at the ages of the Sword and Sandal actors, he's one of the oldest ones of the generation that we typically talk about, the late 50s, early 1960s. He was close to 40 years old when he made, I think he was like 37 or 38 when he made his first peplum film. Now, he'd been in some films before that, just small roles here and there. You know, most notably Little Abner from 1959 with Peter Palmer and, oh, golly. I cannot think of that actress's name, and I'm looking at her right now. I can think of her real name, but I cannot think of her pseudonym. It'll come to me. Leslie Parrish. Yeah, that's who.
Okay.
Leslie Parrish is Daisy May, beautiful actress, still with us. You know, fortunately, but he's in that. You know, because there is a scene in Little Abner, the late '50s version, where there's, you know, a lot of physical culturists in one scene, and Gordon is in some of the. He's in, you know, all the shots, you know, in that scene, but he's also in some of the promotional material from Little Abner. I think he's on a lobby card or two, from what I recall. And he sent me an image, you know, from that movie. But and he'd been in some stuff earlier in the '50s as well. He was part of the Mae West review. You know, she had this Mae West, you know, who had, you know, sort of scandalized Broadway in the 1920s and in the 1930s scandalized Hollywood. By the 1950s, you know, was a 60-plus-year-old woman who was still pretty vital and still, you know, had something to say. So she had a touring act, which was the Mae West Review, where she hired, you know, a bunch of very muscular men. Some of them included Gordon Mitchell, you know,
yes,
who was you know, one of them. And he got to tour the U.S. doing that. And after a while, he had to let his teaching career go. He liked teaching, but I think there was just so much more that he wanted to accomplish in life. And like I said, he wasn't really held back, you know, by familial ties. And I think that makes, you know, I'm not saying that that's an ideal situation or anything, but you know, if you don't have those ties, it does make it easier to get up and move and quit your job and do something crazy, you know, like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. And, you know, he just kind of, you know, floated around. If his life wasn't easy, he made it look that way. I don't know if that makes any sense to you or not.
Oh,
but,
no, yes,
By the time I had met him, he was very at peace with everything, with how his life had turned out, seemingly anyway. I mean, that's the way he struck me. Like, let's just put it that way. Happy with his career, happy to talk about it. He was so excited to learn that people remembered his films. We're still big fans. He was just floored by that. And excited about it. I mean, I think, you know, having known quite a, you know, decent number of actors over the years, some of them sort of willingly, you'll hide themselves away. You know, they don't really want any kind of interaction.
Uh-huh.
For whatever reasons. I mean, you know, some people are very private, and some of them are, you know, very open to interactions with their fans. And he falls into the latter category. He's very open to it. And like I said, just thrilled that people remembered him, remembered his work, you know, loved what he had done. And how many people that he eventually figured out that knew significant chunks of his filmography. It wasn't just from one movie. They had actually followed, you know, they'd actually followed through his career. And had watched you know, the spaghetti westerns that he had done and the horror films that he did in the 70s.
So he was one with his career and experienced it in very many of its facets.
Yes, and, you know, not a lot of people can maintain that kind of enthusiasm about their career. And as somebody who just retired... I could talk, but you know what I mean. I mean, and I think maybe his secret to that was doing so many different things within filmmaking. he wasn't, always the star. He, he had, big, medium, small roles, did a lot of behind the scenes work. So I guess, every day probably was a little different. It probably was something new. And I think it's staying away from routine that, perhaps is the best way to maintain your interest in your career. I don't know if you know what I'm getting at, but if it becomes a grind, if it's the same old, drudge every day, you're going to hate it after a while.
Right.
And I don't think he found that. I think his interest in it, from what he said anyway, remained high, throughout his career. And at the end, at the end of his life, he had sort of a mini career resurgence. He did a couple of films right before he died. And he was so excited about both of them and was looking forward to doing some promotional work, for the films, to get out and promote them and to make sure that people, would go out and watch them, and that's when he passed away.
Well, at least he lived a very full life and got to experience it from a lot of different angles.
Yeah, and like I said, a very, very popular guy, too. I've never heard a bad thing about Gordon Mitchell, and I can't say that for some of the other people profiled on my website, but I can say that about Gordon Mitchell. I never heard one person say anything negative about him at all. And usually when you do hear somebody say anything, they'll always smile. Yeah. Like, oh yeah. He was a really great guy.
Reg Park has a good reputation too. A lot of people said a lot of good things about him over the years. He seemed to take an interest and he only did five peplums, or four, if you count as some people count it. He mentored a lot of people. And he gave them opportunities, and they respected and thanked him for it many years later.
Well, and we've mentioned this before, but with Reg Park, I'm always astounded that he essentially did only do like four or five movies. But they're all fantastic. And I'd be hard pressed to pick one over the other. And it's really interesting because, he doesn't at all seem to be the nervous actor. And then he seems maybe a little too relaxed, in a sense. That's one of the things I really enjoy about them. Now, I wouldn't say that so much for Hercules and the Haunted World, because he does bring some emotional intensity to that one. But I guess maybe some people are just natural-born actors because I think he does a great job at them. And I've always thought it was a shame that he didn't do more films.
Well, he had a very successful bodybuilding business. He had gyms, I believe. He sold equipment. And he also had courses that were very popular because of how massive and muscular he was.
Mm-hmm. And that was his best. He couldn't have bought a better billboard than Hercules and the Captive Women, or Hercules and the Haunted World, where you can actually see him. And it made a lot of sense for him to do that, to promote himself, which in turn, promoted his enterprises.
Yeah, he used the movies rather than allowing the movies to use him. And like with Steve Reeves, he applied what he got from doing the movies toward what he really wanted to do.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I'm not really sure how much, if any, acting training a lot of these people had. Steve Reeves did have quite a bit of acting training.
Yes.
Ed Fury did as well. I'm not sure about Gordon. I don't remember him saying anything about it. He did just sort of kind of sort of fell into it. It just... just being in the right place at the right time and giving the right answer, you know, can take you a long way, I suppose. And like I said, you know, just a few minutes ago, being willing to say yes and being able to say yes are two different things.
Uh-huh.
You know, but he was in, you know, like I said, the right place at the right time. He had a lot of really good memories wrapped around Mae West's review, which he was part of for a season or two. And he said, you know, you didn't really have to, there wasn't a whole lot of choreography or anything to learn, you know. He said that they made mistakes all the time and nobody really cared because it was kind of a fun atmosphere. And he really liked the attention. He loved the crowds and interacting. You know, being in front of a crowd is very different from, you know, acting on a set.
Yes.
And he really liked the energy of the crowd, and I think that was maybe the one thing that he saw lacking in film production, was that you didn't really have that crowd response, you know, to you know, take you a little farther, you know, into the role perhaps, or knowing what they enjoyed out of their performance so you could give them more. I think that was probably, you know, the only real disconnect that he saw, because he didn't do plays or anything like that. I mean, he did films.
Could he have done plays? I imagine that's something he could have got into, if not vocationally, at least avocationally, if he enjoyed the response of the crowds. There's so many community theaters and so many low-budget films happening all the time that if he wanted to try that out, he could have tried it out.
Oh, I'm sure he could have, and he may have, you know, somewhere along the line. But just that I know of, it wasn't a big part of his training. I think it was just sort of a sink or swim scenario, really. And sometimes, you know, that works. And okay, he is a Leo, so there's a little bit of the ham in him, right? and maybe that's all he really needed. To fall into it was just to, you know, see where it would take him. And, you know, it's kind of hard to, you know, pick up sort of mid-career, midlife, and you do something different. You know, when he left his teaching gig, you know, he gave up, you know, steady paycheck, benefits, retirement. On the other hand, it was the best decision that he made. Because I think he got, for his money anyway, much more out of life in doing what he wound up doing. His first film was Atlas and the Land of the Cyclops, which, you know, fortunately for all of us, is public domain.
Mm-hmm.
He has a lot of films in the public domain, and that's another reason to like Gordon. You can watch lots of his films and not have to worry about copyright violation or anything like that. You can post them because he did so many movies that he does appear, you know, a lot more in public domain films than most of the other sword and sandal actors. Steve Reeves is in a lot of films that have since moved in public domain as well. For some of the others, the films that they did are either the copies are in such bad shape that they're almost unwatchable. It really varies, you know, from peplum actor to peplum actor. But a lot of Gordon's catalog is, you know, available on YouTube and archive.org. And I really recommend that, you know, people take a look at his work. His peplum films are a lot of fun. The Giant of Metropolis is really my favorite of his peplum films. There's a bit of science fiction to it. I don't want to give you know, the plot away or anything like that. But there's a bit of science fiction to it, and it's a really interesting film. Gordon looks fantastic in it, by the way. I mean, he really embodies the peplum star in it. He's probably right around 0% body fat. He's a big muscular guy anyway. And he's lit well in the film. Whoever did the lighting did a really good job. And if you're going to watch just one Gordon Mitchell film, I would say Giant of Metropolis. However, the movie of the day for the next few days around his birthday will be all of his movies.
We have Bella Cortez on the show on Sunday. And she in Giant of Metropolis.
Yes, she is.
So I'm looking forward to that. That'd be a very interesting conversation to have with her.
That will be. Yeah, well, that's very impressive. I did not know.
And I learned all this stuff about Gordon Mitchell today and other days from you, so I could ask a lot of questions about Gordon Mitchell and what he was like.
Well, like I said, he pretty much knew everybody and knew where a lot of the bodies were buried. And he used to sort of talk around some. Since he did know so much of the scoop, so much of the dirt, he occasionally would talk around writing a book, but he would say, "Oh no, I can't do that because I would get sued. I have to outlive everybody before I can publish anything like this." And of course, I understand. It probably is best if all that information, died with him, really. But it sounds like they really, some of them anyway, had quite a bit of fun in their lives. Certainly he did. I think he really enjoyed his life overall.
Start wrapping up. We have less than 3 minutes left, and I'd like for people to be able to contact you and to follow your work on the Brian Straubin Theater on Facebook and all the other places where you are.
Yes. Please stop by the drive-in. It's brianstraubintheater.com. The site is updated every day with a movie of the day, birthdays, and a star of the day. You can follow me on social media. I'm not sure even what we're calling Twitter right now, so we'll just leave that one behind. Just navigate on over to Facebook and run a search for Brian's Drive-In Theater, and you'll find me there.
Thank you, Brian. You're awesome. I had a great time talking to you. Happy early birthday, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Okay, be well, Hercules. Take care.
You too. And to all our listeners, until next time, joyous journeys and amazing adventures. This is Hercules Invictus signing off and wishing you all a great day.